North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. It's Friday, October 24th, and you've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here, as always, with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well.
I knew the answer to that question because I asked it to you 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. I'm doing quite well.
I was just checking to make sure the answer's
no,
the same.
Nothing's changed in those few minutes, and I enjoyed probably the last dry bike ride in for a little while. So I savored that experience this morning. It was very nice.
Oh, the colors are just at max right now.
it was very nice. Of course, we're expecting kind of a wet weekend in the, at least the beginning of next week. It looks like the weather is about to change on us. We're also here in the studio with Jack Freeman, staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in today. And as I mentioned earlier, kind of a scattershot week of news, but a bunch of little stories and a couple of big ones to talk about. I will, just starting on the national level, of course, the government shutdown still currently in place, the national federal government shutdown currently in place, largely affecting locally the Forest Service. And I believe on November 1st, they'll be beginning the first full pay period without paychecks, those federal employees. The Sandpoint Ranger Station is closed. Forest Service employees are on unpaid leave until the shutdown ends. In other national news, on Saturday, the No Kings rally was No Kings rallies were held in all 50 states, actually drawing approximately 7 million nationally. And here in Sandpoint, our demonstration, which I believe is the only one in Bonner County, drew approximately 1,200 people, which made it one of the largest in the state. About 26,000 participated statewide. Here in Sandpoint, there was no significant counter protest. And it was the largest event yet in the series of protests and rallies that began this spring. In state news, there was a, well, as Jack Freeman writes, seniors across North Idaho received a startling notice about their Medicare Advantage plans earlier this month, alerting them that their plan would no longer be available next year. Across Bonner and Boundary counties, Medicare Advantage offerings are shrinking by more than 50%, from 37 plans in 2025 to just 14 in 2026. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. In other county news, here in Bonner County, early voting is underway. We are, if you've been listening to this radio station, you've heard plenty about the Sandpoint City Council race, and we'll be talking about that as well. We hosted a forum on Monday featuring all four of the candidates for Sandpoint City Council's three open seats, as well as Mayor Jeremy Grimm's presentation on the wastewater treatment plant bond, which is also going to be on the ballot in Sandpoint. But there's some other items on the ballot that I'd just like to mention. In Clark Fork, incumbent Mayor Russell Schenck will run against Tanya Becker. In Dover, voters have a choice between incumbent city council president Kim Bledsoe, incumbent councilor Merlin Glass, and Jerry Heaps and Hans Steidel. So there's 2 4-year seats and 4 candidates for those seats in Dover. In Kootenay, there's 1 4-year seat open on the city council, and there are 2 candidates for that, Robert Dressel and Danelle Baumgarten Pickett. In the West Pondere Fire District, that's out in Priest River, there is 1 4-year commissioner seat for Subdistrict 1, and there are 2 candidates for that, David A. Van Natter and Nigel Cave. In Pondere, there is going to be a local option sales tax, which people can vote for or against. 1% is the number intended to raise funds for continued development of public access to Lake Pondere and the Pondere Bay Trail, including a railroad underpass, and also including the Field of Dreams funding for the Field of Dreams recreational construction complex construction, and creating an endowment fund for future maintenance at that facility, plus some street and stormwater projects. In East Hope, voters will consider a permanent override property tax levy, estimated to cost $20.89 per $100,000 of taxable assessed property value in order to fund street maintenance and capital improvements. That will be a permanent override. And lastly, in the Northside Fire District, voters will have a chance to cast their ballot in favor or against a special permanent tax levy of $1,345,410, which is up from $661,000, effective in fiscal year 2026, to pay for staffing and equipment and maintaining the district's operations. It would result in an estimated increase of $20.20 per $100,000 of taxable assessed value per year, approximately doubling that that tax. Well, in the city of Sandpoint, where we currently sit and broadcast to you, the city hosted wastewater treatment bond open house on Saturday. And then on Monday, we had the candidates forum, which I already mentioned. And we did have participation from all 4 candidates for Sandpoint City Council at that. A couple other little city news beats. The Pine Street paving project began, and Pine Street is expected on Monday. It began. It so far hasn't been fully closed. They've been closing it block by block, but that is to continue, and expect closures on Pine Street between Boyer and Division on that major east-west thoroughfare here in our little town. And I don't think I had anything else of urgent notice other than to talk a little bit about the Lake Pondere School District. But we can ask Jack about that in just a minute. Did I miss any significant headlines here? Did anyone see anything big in our local papers that we should mention?
I think you hit it. As my list goes.
Yeah, I'll mention an upcoming event. The Lakes Commission is hosting their economic impact analysis fall meeting. That's at the Sandpoint Center. If you're interested in what's going on in Lake Pondere, that is at 10 a.m. on Thursday, the fall meeting of the Lakes Commission. And
Well, yeah, that's going to be an interesting report, because there's been a lot of guesses about the economic impact that we see from having this big, glorious lake next to us. But this is a study that's actually going to put some numbers to that. And it can be used to influence, hopefully, I think, it could be used to influence some of the operations of the Bonneville Power Administration and how our lake is regulated. There's a lot of folks that would like to see the lake level start being raised earlier and maintain a full pool a month, or actually even as much as 2 months longer in the season. And this might provide some economic data that supports that.
That's again on Thursday starting at 10 a.m. in the Sandpoint Center, which is on the ground floor in the bank building
at 414's church.
Where we hosted that that forum.
Yeah, on Monday. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another little local election note is that on Wednesday, Chris, you're hosting on these airwaves. You'll be talking to...
I'll be talking to Holly Ellis from the city about this coming Wednesday. That's the 29th. Yep. Holly Ellis from the city about the revenue bond for the wastewater plant, as well as Mayor Steve Geiger from the city of Ponderay about their 1% local option tax. And we do have individual interviews with each of the four candidates for Sandpoint mm-hmm. City Council. Now they're available as recordings on our website.
Yep.
KRFY.org.
Okay. Jack, your story, I think you're probably your biggest story this week, or your, if we just go by word count anyway, was about that Medicare Advantage plan change. That was interesting. I guess to start out, for those who aren't aware, Medicare Advantage, would you care to tell us what Medicare Advantage is?
Yeah, it's a health insurance plan. Mm-hmm. From what I've gathered, I haven't looked at it entirely, but it comes with like a lot of different bonuses, like free gym memberships and things like that. And it mm-hmm. was also a relatively cheaper option mm-hmm. that some people preferred for those benefits, and you know, if it was in their means.
Yeah, yeah, and it's for those who qualify for Medicare.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And I guess suddenly, there's going to be a significant drop in the availability of these plans, at least in our area. Can you tell us, I guess, what brought that on?
Yeah. So from what I've gathered, it seems like a lot of these Medicare Advantage plans were almost too good to be true from mm-hmm. from the health insurance companies. And, they are, focused on making sure that they don't go out of business. And so the way that Medicare Advantage plans work is whenever you want to make major adjustments to them, you have to cancel these plans mm-hmm. And then restart them. So for instance, with Blue Cross, they had 6 plans. They canceled all of them, but they're bringing in 3 new plans for 2025. So we're seeing, you know, that be a part of the reduction. I believe also Regency Health is completely pulling all their Medicare Advantage plans from the state of Idaho, which contributes to the reduction significantly.
Mm-hmm. Does it, I guess, signing up for Medicare Advantage, so I think kind of the problem here is that when you have to cancel all these plans, even though maybe they come back or half of them come back, still... That means everybody who was on those existing plans is now off and has to re-enroll. And that re-enrollment process is difficult. And because these are new plans, you may have a hard time finding an insurance agent who can be of assistance to you.
Yes, exactly. And on the insurance agent specifically, I talked to a couple of them, and they said that there are in healthcare insurance companies who are just said that on Medicare Advantage plans, we're not going to pay you commission, mm-hmm. Which means that any person who would need an insurance broker, that broker would be doing it for free, basically, mm-hmm. because you can't, legally, they can't ask anybody on Medicare for payment. And so that's where I think the real challenge lies with seniors who are trying to look for a new plan. They either have to go online mm-hmm. and navigate that, which can be a challenge in and of itself, and finding the right information. You know, they can call the federal Medicare building to try to get some help, or they can call the healthcare insurance company, which I think aren't really preferable options to a local person who might be able to help you out a little bit more.
Yeah. The piece is in the Daily Bee that you wrote, and that came out, it looks like, on October 21st. Worth tracking down. You can, of course, find it online if you don't have the paper. I particularly enjoyed you found some people affected by this. It sounded like some colorful characters, I thought. At least some good quotes in there from people who found themselves kind of suddenly at a loss, or, you know, in not expecting to have to go through this process at this time.
Yeah, definitely. And this is something that I want to highlight just really quickly. This is an issue that I really wasn't aware of until I had seniors reach out to me and say, hey, do you know that this is going on? And obviously, I'm not on Medicare, so it's I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And after speaking with people, you know, and collecting information, was able to put together a story. So I would just encourage people that if they are experiencing things to reach out, because there might be a chance that I don't know what's going on, mm-hmm. and it could be a big story like this one.
There is, okay, so reach out to Jack Freeman if you got a tip on a good story. Also, if you are somebody who received that one of those letters and you're not quite sure what to do, you provide a number here. The Idaho Department of Insurance, the Medicare helpline is 1-800-247-4422. And that's something that can be of some service anyway. It's a statewide helpline for folks who need assistance understanding Medicare and what their options are. Let's talk, before we get into local politics, one of your beats, Jack, is the local schools and the school district. It's been a while since we've been talking so much about, I guess, city and county business lately that we haven't really thought about Lake Pend'Oreille School District and what's going on there. The new school year is underway. Any headlines or major bullet points? What's new in the schools this year?
Not a ton of major bullet points, mm-hmm. Quite yet. I know that I'll be doing a story on this next week, but Lake Pend'Oreille and Sandpoint High School really buffing up their JROTC program. They presented the colors at a football game and things like that. I think that's probably the newest thing going on, but I'd say it's business as usual for the most part. They scored really, really well on the ISAT, which is the testing in the Idaho Reading Indicator. They were very, very proud of that and continuing their Every Student Graduates a Reader initiative. They've started a Every Student Graduates a Mathematician or a Competent Mathematician project as well, to kind of piggyback off that success that they've had. And so that's something that's been a focus at the district meetings. I just did a piece that's out in today's Daily Bee about the Career Technical Education Center that's going up. They got a $3.5 million grant from the Idaho Department of Education for that. And that'll be for a lot of those trades, things that they have, like residential carpentry and sports medicine, giving them a more permanent home than they have right now. And that's expected to be completed in June of 2026, a pretty quick timeline for that. They were just putting up the walls while I was out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see the construction underway now, actually, if you go by. So, and there is a project in the offing to do some major renovations to the middle school as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They actually have secured almost all the funding they need for that. Thanks to some money that the state put forward for facilities. And I don't know when that's going to kick off, but I think it's within a year or two.
Yeah, soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Soon. They've made plans for it and talked about it at district meetings, but it hasn't. I don't think it's kicked off yet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you reported a few weeks ago on the new cell phone policy in the schools. Any feedback on that so far? It's to keep kids off their cell phones while they're in class, basically.
Yeah, and that story was really interesting because this is something that the Lake Pend'Oreille School District was actually kind of a year ahead of. Mm-hmm. So a year ago, they implemented this cell phone policy to restrict use, where basically students could only use it in passing periods. Before, it was kind of left up to the teacher, mm-hmm. where the teacher could come by, see you on your phone, take it, but another teacher might say, whatever, I don't care, I'm not going to police it.
Yeah.
So now it's district-wide, and the interesting thing about that is Governor Little signed an executive order before the start of this school year, basically taking that policy and making it a statewide initiative. Mm. where all districts had to have this policy restricting cell phone use. And so it was kind of an interesting case study where the Lake Pend'Oreille School District, the educators that I talked to were very positive about the cell phone restrictions. Even the students I talked to said, yeah, I kind of get it, you know, mm-hmm. that, you know, cell phone use was kind of out of control, even if they didn't understand at first. Once they saw that it was like, okay, people are actually talking and caring a little bit more in class, they kind of understood a little bit more. And then I also spoke to the principal in Priest River, who's just implementing this policy now, and how that's kind of gone there, which has been relatively smooth. Of course, there's going to be a couple of kids who are hesitant to change, very interesting case study, getting to talk with the educators who are really, really positive about the effects of limiting cell phone use.
So the educators at least seem, the response is positive.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Especially because I think they felt a little out to dry, basically, when it was up to them, because then you can't, then the students say, well, you know, Mr. So-and-so lets me use my phone, and then they pit teachers against each other and things like that. Whereas now it's a district policy. They take it, they say, oh, sorry, can't, you know, it's district.
What's the enforcement mechanism, I guess, would be my question. It's just, if you see it, the teacher says, put it away. It's not like they go into, they don't have to leave their phone in the office or something like that.
Yeah. That can happen. It varies. I think that can vary by teacher where, I talked to one teacher who was like, if you have it out in the first minute, you just came from a passing period, whatever, just put it away kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But they do take phones and put them in the office. And teachers can be kind of as strict as they see fit with that. But that's kind of the enforcement that they talk about. It's still kind of up to the teacher, but they kind of now they have that backing to say, yeah, I'm just going to take your phone, put it in the office, you get it at the end of the day.
Yeah. I guess the your most recent story on the school district, I think, was the was just about the flag and banner policy, but that's not they tabled the flag and banner policy, so they didn't enact anything new there, but they. The reasoning was a lack of clarity from state law.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The state law that's, a little bit controversial has wording in it that says that schools can't display any flags of nations that the U.S. is in hostile action with. And that's been kind of an ongoing discussion at these meetings. Like, who makes that list? Mm-hmm. How do we know? How do we, ensure that we're not going to get bit by this policy if we implement it, even though it is state law. They want to be as clear as they can and make sure that they don't have to go back and revise it. And the superintendent, Dr. Becky Myers, said that she spoke to the attorney and said, I think the legislator is going to clear this law up a little bit, so they should wait.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Jack, on Monday evening, I know I saw you over at the... Sandpoint Center on Church Street, where we had, what was the count? About 30 people?
It started out with a smaller group, about 30, 35, but I counted 50 by the time we hit, the middle of the...
Yeah.
The room filled up pretty well, actually.
Yeah, I think most of the chairs got ended up being occupied, and we saw three of the city councilors there in person, and Joel Espiro... came in
by Zoom because he was actually in Seattle for a family purpose.
The mayor was there and gave a presentation, and Holly Ellis was also there to provide some support, I guess, to that presentation. I don't know what it, Jack. What it's election time, and I see that you have your. You've got your candidate profiles up in the Bonner County Daily Bee's election handbook. Came out last week, I think. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Last Saturday.
Yeah. This was your first your first time attending a candidates forum here in this town. I don't know. What's your first response to that? That's a very vague question, but
that's pretty vague. Was it? How would you size up the candidates? Did you see any strong performers there?
I think they all did a really good job of getting their points across. I think it comes down to the attitude that you prefer as a voter. You know, I can see pros and cons to every single one. So that's one thing I loved about the forum is you got to kind of see them in real time, react to questions and, find out how it went. I think, KRFY did a great job putting it on, with everybody. And so, that was the one thing that I just liked as somebody who's met with them individually and spent a lot of time around the city council, getting to see them react to those questions, talk through their answers and stuff like that. I thought it was a fantastic time for the public to, see that in person and really make their own judgment.
It's good to have them side by side, and you can see how they do handle the different questions. The questions come from the audience, actually. We, as the moderators, are just kind of putting the show together there, but audience members submit their questions. We kind of try to combine similar questions into a single question, and it was an hour and a half of good information.
Yeah, and a credit to the public. They were good questions. They weren't throwing them softballs, that's for sure. I thought that was really interesting as well. They really hit home on a lot of the key points that I think people really care about. So it was interesting to see everybody give their take on that.
And you had your write-up on that in the Wednesday Bee, which people could dig up online, I presume. And, of course, you could actually go and listen to the whole hour and a half recording on our website, krfy.org.
It's true. Yes, you can find it there.
You could relive those stellar moments. Jack, did you go to the No Kings rally last Saturday?
I did not, no. Those are my days off, and I try to rest up as much as I can. And also, in my spare time, I write about college football. And so that was what I spent my time doing. But thought it was fantastic that so many people got out to participate in
It was a big crowd. Vocal. Jack, did you go?
I didn't attend. I saw it, but yeah.
I got there late. And there was an estimate there. There was 1,200 people, but, it's half that size by the time I got there, just about, 15, 20 minutes before it wrapped up.
Yeah.
But I would say it was pretty interesting. All the signs and a lot of people were, wearing different sorts of costumes. And there were some of these inflatable characters, like inflatable dinosaur and stuff. and I mean, it was on the street there was kind of, I think people were glad to know that in this conservative town, the people that were going to that, there were like-minded individuals there. And it wasn't that and the last time they had one, there was a bunch of guys with guns that came and, kind of stalked around. Those guys didn't show up for Saturday's thing. Judging from, there were some folks, I was there kind of late. There were some folks driving by. This was held in front of Community Hall on First Avenue. There were some folks driving by that were honking definitely in support, and there were some folks that had angry-sounding honks. So the drivers were split up that way. But it seems like most of the people were reacting, driving, some of the drivers went by, had their own signs, actually.
I think a lot of concern kind of beforehand of whether there would be some kind of clash or, any violence locally or nationwide. And it turned out to be very peaceful. I don't think there were any real headlines of anything violent happening.
I didn't see anything across the whole country.
Let's see here. We're actually out of time. So I was going to ask more about, kind of your local election forecast. We don't have any polling data to draw from or anything. All we can do is kind of speculate on who's going to win on these, the various bond issues and stuff. You just have to go by feel, I guess.
My speculation based on nothing but feeling that it's a pretty quiet election cycle this time. And that if I was going to guess, I'd say that turnout's going to be relatively low. On the other hand, aside from the fact that there's, you know, these council seats up for election, four candidates for three open seats in Sandpoint, the wastewater treatment plant bond is a big question for voters to decide.
Yeah, it is. I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, you would think that in this kind of an election where there's no major national figures or even statewide figures, you'd kind of think that the people who are going to go or to vote in this election are going to have done their research and kind of come to an informed opinion about that.
Yeah. So. Well, we're trying to give them that information, right, Jack?
Oh, definitely. Yes. Right. I hope that there is a good turnout. We'll see, though.
Yeah, you can hear and you can read the candidates in their own words in the B.
Next week, next Wednesday, the 29th, we're going to be talking with the mayor about the wastewater, not with the mayor. We're going to be talking with Holly Ellis, the Public Works Director, about the wastewater treatment plant bond, as well as for Pend'Oreille voters. We're going to be talking with the mayor there about the 1% local option tax question they have on the ballot. Which is the only thing that Pend'Oreille voters have to vote on. There aren't any contested voters, council seats in Pend'Oreille. But the following week, which will be November 5th, we're going to have a little wrap up on what happened in the election. Jack, I suppose you will join me.
I will be glad to join you on Wednesday, November 5th. We'll give the election rundown.
Jack, if you're available that time, I know you may or may not be able to squeeze out another day there, but you'd be invited to come in and give us your insights as well.
Sounds like a great time.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens. I hope people do listen. Everybody everybody on the slate of candidates seems pretty friendly with one another. There's no real harsh conflicts, but there are certainly differences of opinion on a few important issues, housing, growth, parking. It'll be interesting to see how the voters feel
about infrastructure. Although everybody agrees that we got to do something about our roads. The question is how to handle that.
Indeed. And there's differences of opinion between the candidates on that. Take a look and make up your mind, those of you who can vote in those elections. It's time. It's time for Otto's Eclectic Mix. Our time with you this morning has come to a close. We'll start things off with an appropriate one from John Mellencamp. And thanks again, Jack, for coming in.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on. Love talking about the news.
Yeah. You can read Jack Freeman in the Bonner County Daily Bee 6 days a week on newsstands available across the county. Here's John Mellencamp.